It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Florida and Mary Jo Foley are here. The Windows 10 22H2 mystery continues. The mystery to me is, what does that mean? We'll find out. More uses for the word Microsoft Defender. More earnings, learnings. What a week it's been. And some Xbox news, too. It's all coming up next with Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 788, recorded Wednesday, August 3rd, 2022. A Mai Tai of headwinds. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Infrascale. Infrascale delivers industry-leading data protection through backup and disaster recovery. Whatever your data or environment, Infrascale provides continuity and resiliency for your business. Visit infrascale.com/twit to get the free ebook, Five Essential Components of a Ransomware Protection Plan, and learn how to protect your business today. And by userway.org. Userway is the world's number one accessibility solution, and it's committed to enabling the fundamental human right of digital accessibility for everyone. When you're ready to make your site compliant, deciding which solution to use is an easy choice to make. Go to userway.org/twit for 30% off Userway's AI-powered accessibility solution. And by Lenovo, orchestrated by the experts at CDW, to help transform your organization with Lenovo ThinkPads, equipped with the Intel Evo platform for effortless connectivity and collaboration from anywhere. Learn more at cdw.com/Lenovo client. It's time for Windows Weekly, Mr. and Mrs. Dozer. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Dozer and all the ships at sea. Let's go to Paul Thurrott, thurrott.com. Back home.
Hello, Leo.
Where he belongs. Mary Jo Foley.
One week.
All about Microsoft.com. Back home where she belongs, where it's about 1,000 degrees once again.
Yes. Oh, yes, it is.
Had it with the East Coast.
On the surface of the sun. Now you know why people move to Alaska, right, Paul? We were thinking while we're there. How chilly it was.
I'm dropping my wife hints all for the past 2 weeks. You know, I keep talking about these guys that go up there for the summer and just work on a boat or whatever.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, that's really interesting. I'm like, yeah, but wouldn't you want to do that?
You could be a bush pilot, Paul. It'd be great.
I know.
It'd be great.
We're going to skim the tree traps.
How hard can it be? You land in the water. I mean, really, how hard can it be?
Everyone can swim, right?
Yeah. They ask that, don't they? This is the Windows Weekly, where we don't have a whole lot to talk about.
Wow.
Well,
is it?
Am I wrong?
I don't know.
I'm looking at the rundown.
We have a lot of light items.
Light items. This is tidbits. This
will be. It's like a 90s talk show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's just a tapas for your mind. Starting with Windows 10 22H2, as in. What? Where is it? Is it here? Where is it? What's going on? You guys know, right?
We kind of know. Okay, I have to ask Paul something before we talk about this. Is this the first build of 22H2 for Windows 10?
Oof.
Which they claimed.
I didn't think you were
going to stop
me. I
they claimed that.
They claimed
that in the
true.
Blog post.
They do.
I can't believe it either, but maybe
okay,
it's
so,
true.
Well, flashback to some indeterminate time, because I don't remember when this happened, but we had this conversation. As we have had so much in the past year or two, about how weird the insider program has gotten. And in this case, what I had said, and I think this was related, this could have been as long as a year ago, but it was something to do with if your computer was eligible for Windows 11 and you were in the insider program, you would move up to the Windows 11, you know, insider preview. But if it wasn't, you would be on Windows 10. So it was kind of a weird way to get into it. There was no way to choose it. I think that was the conversation we had. I, as a tester, can't go there and say, I would like to be on the Windows 10 channel or whatever. And now that might have been 22H2, right? I think.
I don't know.
I feel like if you've been on in the Insider program with Windows 10 for the past year since Windows 11 has come out.
Right.
You must have been testing something that became 22H2. You had to have been, right?
Just to be clear, we Windows 11 pioneers have been using it for a while.
Oh, yes. No, yes. No.
Yes.
The technically sophisticated among us have already moved on.
It's just the Windows 10 laggards.
Speaking to the left behind crowd.
Yes.
The giant majority of people who are still running Windows 10 and
the
not
The vast
11.
Majority.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, by the way, not the biggest problem with the Insider program, but the lack of clarity on this is sort of astonishing. And it enters into the story we're about to tell about the mystery, such as it is.
Right.
So what is the mystery of this?
So the mystery is they put out a blog post last week saying, yeah, enterprises can start testing Windows 10 22H2. It's in the release preview ring. And then you look and you're like, they don't say anything about it. There's not even a single mention of what's in this. No feature list, nothing. And they said, don't worry. We're going to tell you later this year what's in this. Okay, so you're just blindly testing something that there's no change log publicly available for. I asked them, is this going to be delivered using the cumulative update, type thing? What do they call it again? I'm drawing a mental blank.
Scope. Package, the enablement package.
Yeah, enablement
Look
package.
At us, pulling technology out of the air.
Right off your tongue. Right. And they said, you know what? We're not going to tell you that either. We're just going to say it's going to be a scoped set of features, which is kind of the shorthand for yes, it is going to be
right.
via an enablement package.
I think that's right? what they said with 21H2.
I think it is. I think it is,
I think
too.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't believe we can't keep this straight. It's so clear.
I know, right?
It's like we've never used Windows before.
It was weird to put out a blog post saying we want enterprises to start testing this. Here's who can test it. Here's how people who aren't in the enterprise who aren't enterprises but who want to be seekers can test it. But no, we're not going to tell you the feature list. I'm like, okay, so this is kind of a weird thing. Won't say when it's coming out, right? We don't still know when it's coming. We think September, October, around the same time as Windows 11 22H2, but they won't say that publicly.
So the thing is,
like, wow, okay.
When this blog post first appeared,
yeah,
they didn't explain features. They didn't say anything. So I actually wrote them and said, hey, is there anything new in this release? You can't. They
yep.
didn't even mention that there were features coming that they weren't going to talk about. They just didn't mention it.
No.
So I said, is there anything new we need to know about?
Yeah.
And then they added, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's just, listen, I feel like I made the speech. I could probably just find an old version of it. But here's the thing. Normal people, well, actually, who cares about normal people? There are two groups that matter here. One are the enthusiasts who are testing this thing that I think have a right to know what they're testing.
Yeah.
But more important is the business customers that Microsoft relies on for 2/3 of its Windows revenues who want to be able to plan for the future and know what's going on. They've mixed everything up over the past year, right? One feature update a year, just kidding, we can update it anytime. What is going on? No discussion whatsoever about what is going on. I don't understand how they get away with this. I don't understand how their biggest customers aren't coming to them right now and saying, seriously, speak up. We need to know what's in this thing.
I know. When I saw what they did, I had two different opinions about what they were doing. One is they're trying to punish people who are still on Windows 10, so they're going to eke out information as slowly as possible and not tell them, right? The second thought is there's almost nothing new in this build, and they don't want all the IT people to, put up a giant hurrah, right? Like, yay, there's nothing in it. This is fantastic, right? So,
it's not going to be anything, right? Even though we don't know, I think it's fair to say you're going to see 3 to 5 very minor enterprise-oriented back-end kind of features that aren't going to matter to it.
And a bunch of fixes,
Let me ask then, is 22H2 on Windows 10 different from 22H2 on Windows 11?
Yes.
Oh.
Well, yes. Right, so there's no functional parity going on between these two systems.
Okay, so having seen it on Windows 11 tells you nothing.
No,
well, I mean, listen, I think it was just last week we had this conversation about Windows 11 being Windows 11 22H2 being a very minor release that, there's a bunch of small stuff going into it.
Right.
Almost none of those things could be described as a major update, right? The Snap thing is nice. The live captions is nice, et cetera. Right. None of those things are coming to Windows 10.
Oh, interesting. Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, all you know, for the most part, the new advances you're going to see in 11, not in 10.
Right.
Which, by the way,
although,
depending on how you know, you may like.
Right. Although there's things like Tabbed File Explorer and the redesigned File Explorer, which they've hinted is going to come back to Windows 10. Maybe they've even said that outright. But it's not currently in the release preview for Windows 11. And we don't know if it's in the release preview for Windows 10. I haven't heard anybody say it was in that build for 22.
Crazy thought here. I just, you know, speaking at, you know, just kind of brainstorming here. Wouldn't it be nice if they like made a list of the features?
It would.
So you'd know, you know, what you're going
to get. You know, if only there was some way to communicate with the world, maybe in a verifiable fashion, text-based, online, something. Yeah. I don't know.
Is it because they do A-B testing and so different people get different features? Is that why they don't?
I mean, right now, I don't think anyone on 22H2 on Windows 10 is getting any new features. So I'm sure they're not shy about introducing that. So maybe,
you could make a list. It'd be short, but you could make a list. I feel like if you wanted... I think people would want to, like, I'm very puzzled that people, yes, wouldn't they want to know? I don't know.
No, we agree. We agree 100%. And I also am kind of surprised that there's no, I haven't seen this anywhere. I don't know if you have, Paul, but like somebody who downloaded it posts their own changelog start testing.
I didn't see that.
I said it would be nice if somebody
someone
did it.
I don't think anyone would notice anything. I bet there's nothing.
Yeah, there. That's probably what it is. You know? Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, what Leo just said, which has kind of been our argument all along. I mean, you can't fight insanity with common sense. Like, no one is paying attention here. Like, it's not like we're going to say something where someone at Microsoft says, "Oh, yeah, that makes sense."
Yeah.
why haven't we been doing that? I mean, they just don't do this.
Hmm.
I don't. It doesn't make any sense.
Hmm. I think it must be. I'm trying to project myself into their minds.
Which
can be an experience. I'm thinking it must be because they don't want to promise any particular feature to any particular 22H2 user.
I refused. I can't give them that benefit of the doubt.
Well, maybe we'll test. You know, some of you might get a new media player, and some of you might not. So we don't want to say that comes with that. That would make sense. I mean, these are still insider builds. Yes, they're not.
They are. Yeah.
They come out with the final update, do they put out a list? They could do a table.
Yes, usually.
They do. So I understand for the insider builds, they're not going to say. I get that. That makes sense.
Except that they're asking enterprises to download it and test
shouldn't.
It.
Right. Oh, but that's testing. That's the IT person.
But still, that's a big ask if you don't tell people what's in it.
It's a machine in the corner.
Remember,
it's not.
The original version of this blog post didn't say anything about new features. They just said, "Here's the preview." By the way, the alleged first preview build of Windows 10 version 22H2 went to the release preview channel immediately. That's the last step.
That tells you
chain.
Everything you need to know, right?
I mean, that's really strange. No mention at all of new features. People like me complained or asked, and then they had a little update to the top of it that said, "This will have a scoped set of features," which again, I think was the language they used for last year's update, which had almost nothing
me
in
too.
It. And Microsoft will share more details on this update later
scoped?
This year.
What does that mean again?
Limited.
Enablement package.
Scoped. It's a scoped enablement package.
I think they're for specific scenarios.
They just call it SEP and get it done with if they really want to be obscure.
I think they're scoped to specific customer needs, right? In other words, if they put out some kind of, I'll just make something up, some weird enterprise printer feature or something, this isn't going to impact most of the people that run Windows 10. So this thing may exist. It may work when you need it, but no one needs it. So we're not, most normal people will never even know it exists.
They don't want to say there's nothing in this build. Like, they don't want to say that, right? They don't want to say it's a small set of features, almost all fixes, nothing's in it. They don't want to say those words, right? So scoped sounds
good. There aren't
good.
Marketing people out there who couldn't turn this turd into some lemonade, right? Like, you're going to just say, listen, we have spent the past year focusing relentlessly on quality. This thing benefits from 12 months of security and bug fixes. right? Mm-hmm. This is a much better version of Windows 10 than the one you were running last year.
Yep. That'll be the final blog post when it comes out. You just wrote it for them.
Something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So now I'm happy. That's all I needed to hear.
Right. So when people call in and they say, what about Windows 10 22H2 to your radio show? You'll be like, yeah, scoped set of features. Nothing's in it. Don't worry.
Well, actually, I mean, for the people who call in for him, like normal people, literally, it doesn't mean anything. It's not going to change their lives at all.
Yeah.
The bigger change that could occur to a Windows 10, actually, Leo kind of alluded to this, was these updated apps that probably in many cases will make their way to Windows 10, right? So they redesign or they create a media player app. They release
but
it for
that,
Windows.
That'll 11. Come separate from an update.
Yeah, like it's not tied to 22H. Yeah, right. That's right.
So you'll see. Okay. I think the radio people aren't really insiders. I try to tell them, no, don't do the insider thing. But the messaging that Microsoft puts out pretty clearly is, use whenever the update comes out, you want to apply that one, 22H1 if there were such a thing, 22H2 when there is such a thing, you should do those. And generally it doesn't it's not about new features. It's like, well, it's going to be patches and fixes and security updates and all that stuff over and above. That's what's confusing, because you got your patch Tuesday, and you're not adding new features. So what is this 22H2?
Well, it's just it's a way to rev the version number.
It's just a number? Is that what you're saying? It's just a number.
And to start the support clock ticking, right?
That's right. It's a point of support. That's exactly right.
So that's what it really is. It's putting a flag in the sand saying, okay, now we're on 22H2. And this, for the next three years, will be good. Or whatever.
Yeah, Leo and I were away for this, but the week that the Windows 12 rumors kind of came up, one of the key questions that Microsoft asked to have there, if they're going to move from Windows 11 to 12 or maybe keep it on Windows 11 for some number of years, is that exact topic. Because this resetting of the support clock is very important to Microsoft's business customers especially. Mm-hmm. So you could have a system that is now 3 years old, and we rev it to Windows 12, and, well, guess what? Now you get X number of years of support. That may not be what they necessarily want to do.
So, okay. So I'm just trying to think of formulating what I will say when somebody does ask me about this, which is, don't worry about it. Don't get on the insider ring, whatever you do. When the time comes, it'll be pushed to you. It may have some subtle new features. In this case, probably, hardly anything. But it does establish a new date for support. So you need to do it. Because I have a lot of listeners who are saying, I'm on, whatever it is, 1803.
Or 1809. They might never be on anything else. That might be a different
problem. But so then they say, so what do I do? Because I'm not getting, I'm on 1809. And they say, I'm out of date. I'm out of support.
Oh. I mean, well, see, I would tell my audience.
What would you tell your audience? And I'll paraphrase it in English. Go ahead.
I would tell them to download the latest version of the ISO.
Yeah, that's what I tell them.
Double click it, run setup, and do an update.
What is the time frame for these end of life? Is it 3 years? Is it 18 months? What is the...
It's all different depending on which edition of Windows you're using.
It's so complicated.
Some are 30 months, some are 18 months.
This comes out of the idea that Microsoft has, which probably most people have, which is, I don't care what version of Windows I'm on. I'll get the new one when I buy a new PC. Yeah. But people are not buying new
Microsoft
PCs.
That's right. And to be fair to Microsoft, they do a lot of things that maybe I don't agree with. I don't think that this particular thing was malicious. It's more along the lines of, like, for most individuals with PCs, the idea wasn't, although they did this with Windows 11, right? But the idea wasn't, oh, sorry, you're out of support. Now you have to buy a new computer. The idea was more along the lines of, we will support particular versions of Windows 10 for 18 months or maybe 3 years. You need to upgrade to a newer version sometime in that time frame. So it would be very unusual for any person, I think, to spend 18 months neglecting to update to a new version of Windows. It'd be very hard to do because
eventually they'll push it on you anyway, right?
That's right. Eventually,
but this
you just
is
get it. That's right.
Again, separate from Patch Tuesdays. So I always say, yeah, you always want Patch Tuesday because they're 0 days. You will have a little more time to go to the, what do we call these? Releases? Point releases? I don't know what we call these.
There's so much language into this stuff.
It's
so hard. So there's this notion of feature updates.
It's a feature update.
This is a feature update.
Okay.
A feature update is technically just a cumulative update, really. And they release cumulative updates all the time. But Microsoft also refers to things like, they have this notion of a quality update, right? A quality update is not a feature update. It's something that is just bug or security fixes.
Oh, God, it's so complicated.
I know. Yeah. And there's more. I don't even want to get down this rabbit hole.
Sprint Pooler sent me the page, which it has the Windows 10 Home and Pro, you know, update cycles. But it says Windows 10 Home and Pro follows the modern life cycle policy. What the hell is the modern life? So I clicked that link.
Have you followed? Are you into chaos science at all? It's sort of like it's sort of like that.
It would be almost impossible for somebody to look at this and know what they need to do.
Right. That's exactly right.
And then it has a link right at the top of modern life cycle policy, which says, please go here to search for your product's life cycle. Mm-hmm. And then... I'm so lost.
Yeah.
I'm so lost. And my listeners are the ones who are getting text messages saying, you're overdrawn at your bank, please call us, and falling for it. So people are not...
Mary Jo knows this better than anybody. If you go back in time 5, 10, whatever number years, and say, what's the most complicated thing about being a Microsoft customer? They would say licensing.
Yeah.
So Microsoft has very clearly brought the licensing guys over to this. Because they've turned something that used to
same
be
guys.
Really clear cut.
Yeah.
And has turned it into something insanely complex.
So, as of May 10th, 20H2 expired. So 20H2. So you have to be on at least 21H1, which will end of life December 13th.
There you go.
And then 21H2, June 13th of next year. So that's roughly every 6 months.
Interesting that they have a November 16th date right there.
Start date, November 16th, 2021.
Oh, that was last year. I'm sorry. That's 21H1.
That's 21H1.
Yep.
Or H2, rather. So.
So most of your listeners, I'm looking this up right now, home editions of Windows 10 are 18 months of support.
Right.
Home and Pro, 18 months. Enterprise and Education, 30.
That's where it goes kind of nutty, but we don't have to worry. I don't have to worry about that on the radio show. Okay.
Mm-mm.
The point isn't you're using something that's only going to work for 18 months. The point is your hardware is compatible with Windows 10. Sometime in the next 18 months, you have to upgrade to some new version.
Right.
It doesn't have to be, it actually does have to be the latest version. You don't have to go to every single version, although, like Leo said, actually, if you just look for updates, you're going to get it. There's nothing you can do to stop it.
It's going to happen.
It will happen.
Yeah,
it's going to happen.
It's harder to explain when there's no when a feature update has no new features. It's a little harder to explain. Well, how does this distinct from the Patch Tuesday monthly updates?
Yep.
What am I getting here? And what you're telling me is this is as much for Microsoft's business reasons as it is for actual updates to Windows. It's not really so much about updating Windows. It's more about saying, okay, support starts. The support clock has now been bumped up another 6 months.
Yep. And in keeping with what we've been talking about for the past few weeks, Microsoft has made it very clear that they can and will add new features to at least to Windows 11 anytime they feel like it.
Through the store and stuff. Yeah.
This through whatever means they have. And there are 3 or 4 weeks. Well, there are at least 3 weeks of updates we can get as Windows users every month. Microsoft can throw that stuff out there whenever they feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do.
And we don't know what in the future, how many months of support you'll get on future versions of Windows, like Windows 12 or whatever the next major release is called. Yeah.
This is like one item in a longer list of items I have in an article I'm working on. But we talk about seekers, right? Mm-hmm. This notion that if you just navigate to Windows Update in the Settings app, you're a seeker, which is not the way life should work, right? That should be the place you go to see if there are any pending updates, and then you say, as the user, whether or not you want them. But the very act of navigating to that page causes it to look for updates, and then there's no stopping it, right? There's really no way to stop it. There is really a way to stop it, but as for normal people, there's no way to stop it. It's kind of like, you know, if you walked onto a car lot, sat in a car, and they say, hey, congratulations, you just bought it. You're like, what are you talking about? I'm just sitting here. Right. But you went in the car, so now it's yours. You know, like it's not the agreement that you thought you made. And this is for all the stuff that's awful about Microsoft and Windows and whatever, I think this is one of those things that maybe doesn't get talked about enough and maybe should be looked at, frankly, by regulators or whatever. It's a very anti-customer policy. It's a very strangely kind of antagonistic way to do things.
I saw a funny conversation on Twitter about this last week because there was an IT pro who was asking somebody at Microsoft who worked on Windows Update, why do you make it so I have to, on Windows 11, click multiple places to see my Windows Update history and to check which updates are installed? And the person said, it's because we don't want people doing that.
Oh.
We don't want people going there.
We intentionally make it complicated.
Right.
So
but then the person also said, but we're also thinking how we can make this simpler for IT pros because you all don't want to have to do two clicks instead of one to go see this information. But we're trying to go on the assumption that most normal people should never look at Windows Update. They should just never look at it.
God, this is really pissing me off. All right.
Why don't you just make Windows Update a command line interface and then no one will look at it?
Yeah, that would be good, actually, because then IT pros could get right to it, right, and handle it, and normal people would have to
That's interesting that you said this, because this is actually my central premise, which is that we often talk about how crazy Microsoft is with Windows and what are they doing, and there's no strategy. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a strategy.
Me too.
And I think it's trying to overcome decades of just kind of natural evolution of Windows. And frankly, thanks to their business customers who demand that they keep everything in Windows and never drop compatibility with everything, we've got this kind of archaeological dig of technology layers. It's a mess.
Yep.
And it's got different ways to do different things. There's like eight different ways to do things. And they're trying, you know, they want to make it simple. And it's really hard to make this giant mess of whatever it is simple. And I think they're trying. Mm-hmm. But you know, they're losing us. Well, they're losing enthusiasts as they do this. And I think that's the calculated risk. I mean, they want the mainstream. You know, Apple's market power is not based on enthusiasts, not in the technical, you know, like technical enthusiasts. These people are obviously enthusiasts of Apple, but they're mainstream customers. Like, they're just normal people. And that's what Microsoft wants. They want the normal people.
Right. That's the trade-off, right? Like, you and Leo always say, people who are tinkerers and people who like to be able to customize. You always picked Windows and you picked Android because those are the ones you can customize, right?
Right. That's right.
Now Microsoft's leaning more into the idea of, no, we want Windows to be simple like Mac, right? So the more they make it that way, the less they're going to make it customizable. That's going to be the trade-off,
That's exactly right.
Yep. Yeah.
Apple does not, I'm trying to think, Apple doesn't really publish anything like this. And they don't have an insiders program. Well, actually, they do. They have public betas.
Well, no. So, actually, that's a good comparison because you could go to Apple's website right now, look at the page that they have for the beta version of iOS 16 or macOS Ventura, whatever it's called, or iPadOS, whatever. They have this beautiful magazine-like spread that goes down over multiple pages.
Yep.
All the features. It's aimed at people. Yep. It's written in simple English. It's marketing speak, so it's... Look how exciting. And
they hire our hosts, people like Serenity Caldwell, to write those things. Really good journalists and know what they're doing.
Normal people will read that and get excited about it maybe. You know, there isn't anything. Leo just showed a bunch of Microsoft screens. They're designed so no one reads them.
It's not attractive.
You fall asleep reading these things.
Yeah.
They're awful. Mm-hmm. And then you don't learn anything. At the end, you're like, well, hey, you set out to find out what was new in the next version of Windows 10. What's new? I have no idea. I don't even know if it's coming now. I'm actually confused. Do they make Windows 10? No, I mean, it's
is it unnecessarily complex, you think, or is it intentionally so?
I don't know.
It feels this is part of the ethos of Windows. It's like, well, it's kind of nerdy.
You're on candid camera all the time with Windows? Like, is this real? Did this really happen?
No, and also, it's complicated because there's not just one version, right? Like, there's all these different versions, right?
Yeah, Apple doesn't
Each one
have
has
that
a different
problem.
Number of features,
no, there's
right?
There's no Pro and Home, Mac OS Pro, right. Home, Enterprise. Yeah. None of that.
Right.
No, the other thing is, and Apple, this might make Microsoft crazy. Remember the goal with Windows 10, Terry Myerson said in January 2015, is to have every single user on Windows on the same version of Windows. That was Windows as a service, right?
Yep.
Meanwhile, Apple will come out with some random version of iOS, whatever, and then 1 month later, they're like, hey, 83% of the user bases are in this new version. You know, like they're doing exactly what Microsoft wants to do. But the problem, you can't get that stuff to happen unless you do all those other things Leo just mentioned, which is we don't have eight versions of Mac OS. We have one. We don't have eight versions of iOS or iPad. We have one.
Well, the difference is Apple is a hardware company. Although
they don't have as many business users.
Yeah.
That's who's...
Although the distinguishing feature of Apple's hardware is also their
Microsoft
operating system.
Microsoft has built its business on complexity. Think about Office 365 and all the different SKUs, the E3, E5, all the add-ons, all the stuff you can tack on to it, how much you could spend per user per month. You know, the entry level one is probably $4 or $5.99 per month, but I don't know what the upper level one looks like. You add Microsoft or Windows 365, all the I bet you could spend $50, $70 something per month per user.
I bet
maybe
more than that.
Maybe I'm just maybe more.
Hundreds,
which is
hundreds of dollars.
Ludicrous because there's like an Excel spreadsheet of all the stuff you can pay for if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
It's a completely different way of doing things. But honestly, I really feel. Leo said hardware, and that's true, you know, hardware versus software. But I think the real differentiation there, the big difference between Apple and Microsoft is Microsoft found success with businesses and Apple found success with people.
Yeah.
And it just makes your products completely different.
Yeah.
So we as individuals are suffering from this enterprise focus because we're reading something that's not meant for normal people. And we're like, what is this thing?
Mm.
And it's like, it's not for you. It's for some nerd in an ivory tower. Yeah. Telling his users why they can't do things.
Hmm.
You know, I wish it wasn't this way. I for many, many years, could you just make one version of Windows? You know, why can't all the features be there for everybody? You can just charge businesses more for the support. But that's not, that's not the business model. They know what they're doing. Obviously, they're a pretty big company last time I checked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a pretty small person the last time I checked. So, you know.
They're keeping a lot of licensing experts and partners in business with the complexity.
Yep. Yeah. We really milked this Windows 10 story. I
got
a lot more out of that.
You thought we were going to whip right through that, but no.
All right, well, let's take a break then and regroup, think about what we've just learned, and we'll be back with the...
I challenge you not to be depressed by it.
Yeah, we're going to go to Windows 11 next. Kids, how exciting is that? Windows Weekly is brought to you by Infrascale. Do you know the name Infrascale? Infrascale is a great choice for fighting ransomware. And we need that, don't we? The statistics for ransomware are alarming, to say the least. Cyber criminals, it is estimated, could penetrate 93% of company networks. This is from betanews.com. 93% of us are vulnerable. By the way, not just big companies, SMBs. 46% of SMBs have already been a victim. Almost half have already been hit by ransomware. So we talk about this on Security Now a lot too. That one of the very first things that solves this is a good backup. And that's what Infrascale is all about. Infrascale Cloud Backup gives you the security you need to manage backups. And the thing is, these backups are secure from hackers. Backup and protect your endpoint data. Never pay a ransom. Sleep easier at night. You can backup everything. I mean, SaaS applications, endpoints, servers. And you can, I love this, execute disaster recovery on site or in the cloud. So even if everything's, destroyed, you can still do the disaster recovery. Every company needs a secure, simple to configure, easy to manage endpoint data protection solution. Infrascale. It integrates with Hyper-V and VMware, which means, now you're starting to get the picture. You can do site-to-site failover with orchestration in the Infrascale cloud. So that is really cool. that really means, you know, it's not just ransomware. It, you know, could be your business fell in a hole. But you could still, using Hyper-V or VMware, fail over to a new site and orchestrate it in the cloud. You can keep hackers away. We talked about this before. You know, one problem with backups, especially hot backups, is the hackers get to them too. The ransomware infects them too. With InfraScale, immutability is at the core of how their product is designed. Your data is encrypted in storage, validated, verified. No one can touch it. No one can modify it. So this is a great solution. Whether server crash, human error, malicious activity, or a sinkhole underneath your business, any natural disaster. And you know, with the floods in Kentucky, for instance, these are so unexpected. They could be just as devastating. You really got to prepare for this. A localized or site-wide incident can be mean unanticipated costs, unplanned downtime, and that can really cost you. In fact, Gartner says the average cost of downtime across all industry sectors, $5,600 a minute. A minute. Soon as you're down, that clock starts ticking and the money starts going. That's about $300,000 an hour. Boom, 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 every hour until you get it fixed. Wow. Clients and partners alike, including many MSPs and VARs, love InfraScale backup and recovery solutions to eliminate downtime and data loss with the most cost-effective enterprise-grade data protection solutions to help keep their businesses running. And if disaster strikes, your applications, your data, your systems are recovered and available in record time. With that clock ticking, man, you want it fast. Their award-winning world-class support is there to hold your hand and make sure your business is protected 24/7. They now use SSDs and no extra charge, so fast, fast, fast. InfraScale has a solution for your data protection needs. Whatever your data, whatever your environment, InfraScale, I-N-F-R-A, Infra, S-C-A-L-E, Scale, provides continuity and resiliency for your business. So where do you go? Infrascale.com/twit. In fact, just go there to get the free ebook, Five Essential Components of a Ransomware Protection Plan. Learn how to protect your business today. Learn what InfraScale can do for you. Infrascale.com/twit. We thank them so much for supporting Windows Weekly. We thank you for supporting Windows Weekly by using that address. That's all you have to do. That way they know. Get the booklet. It's an ebook. Get download it right away. Infrascale.com/twit. Thank you, InfraScale. What? What are you laughing at? What are you giggling at?
Mary Jo Foley is turning the Discord into Sriracha Central.
Well, can you blame her?
What's wrong with this?
That's a beautiful kitty cat. That's a gorgeous kitty cat. That's a kitty cat we all love. It's Sriracha time. Named after a hop.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, Leo, I have to, you know, kind of come clean on this. We buried the lead today.
Uh-oh. Something huge happened?
There's a new build of Windows 10, 11 for the dev channel that adds an Xbox Game Pass widget. And I got to tell you.
Hallelujah.
Yep.
We went back and forth about making that the lead. We had some tug of war, like our logo.
We looked into licensing the song We Are the Champions for this part of the show, but it was a little
I did my time. I didn't have a widget, but now I do.
We all agree. Game changer. Right.
So what does this widget do? It just sits there and tells you what game you were playing before you had to go to work?
Yeah, it doesn't look like, I don't know what the point of it is, honestly. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. But wait a minute.
It's not even the game you're playing. It highlights new additions to the Game Pass library and games. Yep. So it's really just an ad.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cynical.
Is that harsh?
View of
that's
this.
Harsh.
Yeah. Harsh, but not wrong. Harsh, but not wrong.
The Game Pass widget. It's not your games. It's the games you could be buying.
It's right. Well, if you're a Game Pass subscriber, you would want this widget, and you're already paying for them. So
Yeah, okay. So it costs you nothing. Lets you know.
There's another big feature, though.
What else? There's more?
Yeah. For those few users who are in the dev channel and have tabs and File Explorer. By the way, I don't really have that many computers in the dev channel. I only have it on one computer. So you can now, I'm going to try to say it with this straight face like it means something. You can now middle click a folder in the navigation pane.
What?
And it works like a right click.
I can.
Oh, no, it doesn't. It works to open in a new tab.
I'm sorry. middle click? Ooh.
Now, I would imagine. I don't have this in front of me, so I can't tell. But I'm guessing if you right-click a folder in the navigation pane in a tab-based File Explorer window, one of the items in there will be open in a new tab. I'm sure that's one of them. But this is a quick way to do it. If you have that middle button, you can... How about that Windows 10 thing, though, huh? That was...
I think that's really a little more interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad because my middle button right now, I'm clicking it. And it doesn't do nothing. Right?
Doesn't do nothing.
Clicking doesn't do nothing. So, hey, I got a whole button here. I'm just waiting.
Yep. Windows 11 is all about using all the buttons.
Many, many buttons. All right. Yeah. Well, that's
oh, wait, there's more.
Oh, wait, there's more.
Last week, I guess this happened after the show, maybe on Thursday or something, Microsoft released
two new builds. Wait a minute. I broke my mouse.
Yeah, no one uses that button. It's not very resilient.
Now it's not moving anymore.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Is that a Dell mouse?
Yeah, it's a Dell mouse. I didn't hit it that hard.
Maybe you popped a battery loose. Did you look in the bottom there?
You know, it has... Okay, there's one bad thing about this Dell mouse, I have to say. Mm. It has this button here, which is really easy to hit, that switches the Bluetooth channel. Yes. Like, I don't know why I would... No, no, I'm fine.
That is an amazing user interface. That's crazy.
That shouldn't be there, because that's right crazy. Where your palm goes. So I think when I hit it, I switched. Now I have to remember where I am. Am I on one, two, or three?
This is like presets for a seat in a car.
And on the seat.
The wrong
put them on
and
the
you
seat.
Jammed up against the seat, steering wheel.
Yeah, put it on the seat. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, put it on the seat.
Where I guess if I had three laptops I was using with one mouse, this would be useful.
That's aspirational.
Oh, it's moving.
Dell's part.
It did it. But now, that's even better. The light went out, so I don't know which one it was. Okay, but it's working now. Anyway, back to the show.
UI by Microsoft Licensing. All right, so sometime in the past week, Microsoft released two new beta channel builds of Windows 11. Remember, the beta channel has been split in two. Some people are testing new features and some aren't.
This was yesterday, by the way.
It was yesterday. I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't even pay attention anymore. All right, so it was yesterday. It was in the past week. Nothing... what happened? I just tapped my desk and
you must have one of those mices.
No, it just changed this. Okay,
it made a boing.
I got an online notification that my microphone had changed. Anyway, I will stop tapping my desk.
Your microphone has changed.
Is it not back to?
No, it's something weird now. It's good. I kind of like it.
Wow,
you're a little louder. Right. I think just leave it.
I think I'm just going to leave it alone. Anyway.
Maybe you were on the wrong mic all this time.
Maybe I was on the wrong. Oh, maybe.
Sounds good.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's nothing really much to speak of here in the way of new features. Some security networking stuff. Not really much. I don't know. Nothing really. So this was kind of an innocuous series of builds, if you will. So
all right.
There you go.
There you go.
It's even more exciting than the last thing.
Well, then let's go to the item 3 under Windows 11, the Windows subsystem for Android.
Yeah, this one's even more exciting. Now, if you are using a Windows Insider build of any stripe and have Windows 11, you will start getting an update for the Windows subsystem for Android that enables joysticks and gamepads in Android games. Okay. So I guess... What were we doing before? I guess they were mostly designed for probably for multi-touch. I guess we were using it on a tablet. But now you can interact with games, I guess, that would support it. And if you've looked through the games list that's available through the Amazon App Store for Android, you know there's nothing there.
Nothing you want.
But no. That's all there are, right? It's just games that's in the store.
No, there's several
like
apps.
Like one or two other apps plus a million games that no one wants.
There's a double-digit number of apps. It's like 11, maybe, or 13.
Okay. 11. That's good.
Goes to 11.
It's not many.
All right.
Okay.
Because it's not the Android store, really. It's the Amazon Fire store.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's like Android.
It's Android-like. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Well, that was exciting.
Yeah.
And now it's time for Mary Jo. We're kind of, are we starting to divide everything up into Paul and Mary Jo stories? Like now it's the Microsoft 365's time?
No.
That's not all. That's not all Mary Jo.
No, Paul will chime in.
Well, in keeping with our new logo, we're kind of, we're doing the back and forth.
Yeah.
Oh, you like the tug of war finally, huh?
Mm-hmm. We're trying to embrace it.
Everybody hates it.
You know what? I think I said this earlier, but if I didn't, it's sort of like the name Pentium. The first time I heard it, I was like, nope. And then over time, I was like, yeah, it's fine. you just kind of get used to it.
Okay.
And you don't think anything of it. Okay. And I think it's fine.
I spent thousands of dollars on it, so you better like it.
Hopefully two man years of work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was. Yeah. Many hours devoted. Yeah. Focus groups up the wazoo.
Wow.
When you think of these two, what do you think the most? They fight a lot. They're like an old married couple.
Yeah, that's what I told them. Yeah. Microsoft. All right, I'm going to get a cup of coffee. You're in charge. Microsoft 365.
Excellent.
It's all yours. I'm going to go get coffee. Okay.
Excellent. All right. So Outlook Lite. We heard about this in early July when Microsoft put it on the Microsoft 365 roadmap. So they put an item saying we're building this thing, Outlook Lite. It's for Android devices, lower end. Then when we asked Microsoft about it in early July, they said, "Yeah, we have nothing to say." I'm like, "Yeah, it's on your roadmap though. Like you put it on the roadmap, right?" Okay. Anyway, it's starting to roll out now as of this week. August 1st is the official date. It is exactly what the roadmap said. It is a light version of Outlook. It can work on Android devices with only 1 gig of RAM. Like it's meant for very low end. Supports 2G networks, 3G networks. And as we suspected, it's only designed for people in certain countries. So it only works in Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Ecuador, India, Mexico, Peru, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, Taiwan, Thailand, Turkey, and Venezuela. They said they may add some more countries, but that's it for right now. It's in the Play Store. You can go get it. Everybody I'm seeing who's trying it out is saying, yeah, it's good. Has all the things Outlook has, email, calendar, contacts. It's just more stripped down. It's not meant for business customers, so it doesn't support the Android work profile or mobile application management. It's not meant for those kind of scenarios. It's meant for individuals. And it supports
Outlook Lite,
L-I-T-E. Yes, it is. It works currently works with Outlook.com, Hotmail, Live, MSN, Microsoft 365, and Exchange Online. And they said in the future, we're going to add third-party accounts and multiple accounts, but they didn't give a date for that. Okay. So, yeah, you know what else I asked them? I asked them if it came out of some acquisition or if it was just them stripping Outlook down to its essence. And they said, we have nothing to say, which is kind of odd about that. Yeah, they wouldn't answer the question.
It seems like if this thing was architected correctly, they would base all mobile versions of Outlook on this thing and then just add stuff to it for the normal client.
Right, maybe. Maybe that's why they don't want to say, because Outlook Mobile, as everybody who listens to this show knows, is a Acompli, basically, right? Another one of their acquisitions. So, yeah, it just was kind of disappointing because you figure when they said back in early July, we can't talk about it. I'm like, oh, maybe there's something interesting, cool, secret about it. Nope. It's exactly what you thought it was. A stripped down version of Outlook for low end devices for people in certain countries. Maybe when you're in Mexico, you could get a low end Android.
It was literally,
I
should be able to just install it, right? It should work on any device.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious about it.
They made it sound like it was tied to users in the country, but you can probably change your settings just to try it.
Or use a VPN or something.
Right.
We've talked about the Microsoft Office client, which is kind of a lightweight version of the standalone apps. I like that app a lot. I like the idea of a light app. Why wouldn't I want a lower resource version of this thing on my phone?
Yeah.
You know,
I know.
And I'd like to see what the missing stuff is so I could make right now it's multiple accounts, so that would be a deal breaker.
Yeah,
but
it is.
But I'm curious about that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I go to Mexico, I'll see if I can get it.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, so that's it. That's Outlook Lite.
In other Outlook news.
The next one is funny. Next one is funny. Uber emails are crashing Outlook.
Yeah.
Not funny, but...
This is,
entertaining.
Well, yeah, to be clear, this is the, I believe this is the desktop client, right? So this is not Outlook Mobile, but you know, when you use Uber, they send you a receipt via email, and there's something about that receipt. I think it's some kind of a table they use or something, complex table. It actually causes Outlook to stop running. And if you're using Word, because remember, Word is often used as the display engine for emails, it will actually cause Word Word to stop responding. I don't know why.
Man, you're laughing. It's not funny, Paul. What about Lyft, though? Yeah. Does it only happen with Uber or also Lyft?
That's so weird that Uber emails are crashing Outlook. But do they know why?
They're gonna yeah, they do. It has something to do with the rendering of complex tables. They are going to fix it. And in fact, it's going to be an update to this bug. It's going to the beta channel very soon.
It's an interesting bug. Yeah.
Complex it'll be out tables. In the patch Tuesday updates.
Fix it fast, though, because you know the first step in an exploit is crashing the system. The next step is, you know, hackers are now trying to make emails with complex tables.
Plus, they've just kind of publicized what the problem is.
Yeah, they've even announced it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, people can kind of look at that. Hey, here's an idea. Throw a VBA macro in there. And
Why not?
What could possibly go wrong? By the way, it's fascinating. We were talking again about the VBA macro thing. And a company was studying the rise and fall of VBA macro exploits. And the minute Microsoft changed that policy, the exploits fell off the face of the earth. I mean, it really does make a difference what the default policy is on macros. So it's a good thing they're going to make that, you know, off by default, because
that's right.
And not put that little easy to click button, because people really, you know, take advantage of that.
Yeah.
I'm so excited that now I can use Teams on my Apple Silicon Mac.
not quite yet, but coming. I know. This was a little deceptive. Today they announced GA for the next version of Teams client for all Mac users. But then you read the post and it says, yeah, it's going to roll out in increments over the coming months. So it's not really there yet.
You know what's interesting to me? They have a Teams app for iPad, which means they
No, no, sorry. There is a Teams app for Mac. It's just not optimized for M1, right?
But I'm saying I'm running an M1 iPad and...
Oh, I see. Yes.
It's not an Intel version of Teams on my M1 iPad.
That's true.
So I'm a little confused. It's not that... In other words, it wouldn't be that hard. In fact, I might even be able to run the iPad version of Teams on my Silicon.
Microsoft's support of M1 stuff has actually been a little on the slow side. You know, how long did it take them to come up with a native M1 client for OneDrive?
I mean, it still works. It's not a question of it not working. It works in Rosetta.
Well, I mean, in my experience...
Well, there was emulation, the right? Like, you could run it
It wasn't ideal. For a while. Yeah. It wasn't ideal. Yeah.
And Teams is kind of a pig of a program, right? It's it's a big app, so optimizing it for the native silicon makes a lot
Maybe,
of sense.
Maybe the version I'm running on the iPad is a stripped-down version compared to what it would be on the desktop. Maybe that's it.
That's a good question.
So the way they say this is going to work is they developed a universal binary version of Teams that'll run on all Macs, including the ones with Apple Silicon, and then it'll automatically just get delivered to you if you have Teams.
That's nothing magical. You don't have to do anything. All apps do that. Yeah. That's called. Yeah.
You know, let's be honest here. Microsoft enabled it. Let's give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
Microsoft. Sure. Yes. Two years later, they did it.
Yeah. I wonder why. Yeah. Maybe first of all, Apple did a good job of making Rosetta to work well enough that you didn't notice.
That's true. Right? That's true.
So maybe they just wasn't. They didn't feel like there was huge pressure to.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of Mac users use Teams? Wow, that was that silence spoke volumes,
Your Honor. Do I have to answer that question? Oh, I do.
Under duress, I would say under duress they might use Teams. Yeah.
Not by choice. Yeah. I had to use it. Well, it's funny because I made a call to Premier Networks, which runs the radio show, and they're a very big Microsoft house. I mean, it's all Microsoft. And I had to use Teams, but it was fine. Mm-hmm. I started to put it on my Mac, and then I remembered this whole thing that it's Intel, so I didn't want to put it on my nice Mac Studio. Mm-hmm. So I just put it on. That's how I know it runs very well on the M1 iPad. So
Everything to me has run well on the M1 iPad. The one exception was that OneDrive client, but I think it's the nature of what it does with sinking and so forth.
Different kind of thing.
Yeah. But that was the only issue I ever had. And, you know, as we infamously talk about all the time, if you run Parallels and Windows 11 or 10 on ARM, that runs faster in emulation.
Isn't that funny?
Than it does on a real computer. So, yikes.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
Yep.
I would like to, let me just kind of parse out how long the next segment and the Xbox segment will be. I think it'd be a good time to do a commercial break here. Let me just do it here.
Okay.
I'm just trying to, you know, even it all out. So, it all works out.
I can blow through the earnings thing quick if you want.
No. No, that's the problem. I would have to, you would have to do it slowly.
Oh, why say? Okay.
Which I don't want
slowly.
You to, I really don't want you to do. So now it won't matter.
What does Intel do again? Could someone tell me what Intel
does? What's going on? Our show today brought to you by, I'm very proud to say, UserWay. We use UserWay on our website. In fact, if you want to even kind of get a little taste of what UserWay can do, just go to twit.tv. And in the lower right-hand corner, you see that. You see the little Vitruvian, man, the the Universal Access logo. Click that, and you'll see all the amazing things. And that was like, we added that with one line of JavaScript. Every website, and this is, by the way, the law of the land in the U.S. anyway, thanks to the Americans with Disabilities Act, a very, I think, a great law. There was a pizza company that had a website, and it wasn't accessible, and they were sued over the ADA. Pizza site, we said, well, we have a phone number. If you, you know, all you have to do is know what the phone number is. You can call us. You don't have to use a website. The Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled, no, a website is a public entity, and the ADA says every website, without exception, has to be accessible. So, you know, if you have a website, you need to look at UserWay. UserWay's incredible AI-powered solution and tirelessly enforces the hundreds of web content accessibility guidelines, WCAG, WCAG, they call it, the WCAG guidelines. And they can do it in a matter of seconds. UserWay's incredible AI can do more than an entire team of developers can do in months, and for a lot less money. In fact, I know when we started looking at this, we go, oh, we have to be accessible. It was overwhelming, the idea of making your website accessible. But thank goodness UserWay solutions are cost-effective. They're easy. They make it very simple to do what you want to do anyway. Not just, you know, follow the law, but to make your site accessible to the millions of people with disabilities. In fact, if you want to know right now how good your site is, you can use that free scanning tool at the UserWay site to see if your site is ADA compliant. Just go to userway.org/twit. If you have a, if you're a big company, enterprise level, UserWay offers a managed solution too. Their team will do the whole thing for you. In fact, that's exactly what Coca-Cola does, Disney, eBay, FedEx. Over a million websites trust UserWay's AI and machine learning solutions. Almost all the big brands. In fact, UserWay is the number one accessibility solution in the market, 61% market share. But don't get scared off. It's not going to cost you this. It's not going to cost you like Disney. You can get started today, $49 a month on UserWay's monthly plan, less than we pay for, you know, the web fonts we use in our font. And now we're ADA compliant and we're accessible. Reach more customers. Build loyalty. We're going to get you 30% off that price. There are a billion people in the world with disabilities, 13% of the population. They're potential customers that you will lose if you're not compliant. So you're avoiding, you know, fines, you're avoiding revenue loss, and you're building trust with a really important group of users. It's the leading accessibility solution in the market today. On the cutting edge for years, creating innovative accessibility technologies that push the envelope of what's possible. They use AI and machine learning. I'll tell you why. For instance, images on your site, you need alt tags. You probably know that. That's what the computer vision does. It automatically generates image alts, which you could then add to. So, you know, you may say, well, that's a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge at sunset. And you could say a bicyclist rolling across the Golden Gate Bridge. You can enhance it, but it gets you started, which is nice. It remediates complex nav menus, the bane of not just unsighted users, but of every user. It makes sure your pop-ups are accessible. It fixes vague link violations, fixes broken links, uses accessible colors while remaining true to your brand. And you'll get a detailed report of everything UserWay has fixed, so you know exactly what it's done. Works. In fact, they have plugins for WordPress and Shopify and Wix and Sitecore and SharePoint and more. Every site. If you can add a line of JavaScript to your site, it's what we did for ours. UserWay works. Let UserWay help your business meet its compliance goals and improve the experience for your users. Just ask the voice of Siri, Susan Bennett, what she thinks of UserWay.
Hi, I'm Susan Bennett, the original voice of Siri. You won't hear me say something like this too often. I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're looking for. But every day, that's what the internet is like for millions of people with disabilities. UserWay fixes all of that with just one line of code.
It's so easy. I could vouch for that. UserWay can make any website fully accessible and ADA compliant so that everyone who visits your site can browse seamlessly, customize it to fit their needs. And it's a great way to showcase your site, your brand's commitment to millions of people with disabilities. UserWay.org/twit. We're going to get you 30% off their already very affordable AI-powered accessibility solution. Book a short call. Find out what UserWay can do for you. Get their accessibility guide. It all starts at UserWay.org/twit. UserWay, making the internet accessible for everyone. UserWay.org/twit. And we thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. You support us by using that address, userway.org/twit. All right. Thank you for letting me just interrupt there. Let's talk about earnings. Now, the earnings we talked about last week, is there more to say?
Well, more companies, some of which compete with Microsoft.
You're not talking about Microsoft's earnings, but yeah, no. This was a crazy week for earnings last week.
I have to write these things up, and it's just miserable. So
everybody came out. Everybody.
Yeah, it's tough. So Apple is a great example, right? Apple made a gazillion dollars. Well, Apple made, what was the exact figure? $83 billion in revenues, $19.4 billion of net income, but only 2% growth year over year. The iPhone and services both revenue gains year over year, but all their other businesses actually fell.
Luca Maestri, their CFO, had the quote of the analyst call, said it was a cocktail of headwinds that Apple was facing. I think Stephanie needs to come up with a cocktail of headwinds.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. That's good. Yes. That's good. That's almost a nautical sounding cocktail.
I know. I love it.
That's interesting. So to me, services is the big deal. I mean, iPhone, obviously, but services is now Apple's second biggest business. Only grew 11% in the quarter after four straight quarters of growing over 20%. Also, they lost subscribers for the first time ever, at least that I noticed. Quarter over quarter, not year over year, which is kind of interesting. So,
and of course, all the investors are saying, Apple, you got to break this number down because Apple does what Microsoft does.
You know
they
what?
Bundle that services.
Businesses. I freaked on that today on Twitter. Yeah. Hey, thanks for waking up, rest of the world.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to do this.
Yes.
Why? Like this.
How
isn't
can you
like
invest
the new Apple thing
if you don't know what this is? What this product is.
That makes me crazy. I have an idea. Maybe they should break out the. Yeah, that's a great idea. We've been talking about this for 10 years.
Yeah. On this
every
show.
Every public company should be forced to explain exactly what's
Where
going on.
Where is the
with
SEC
their,
in all this? They really are
I don't
just
know.
Asleep at this
Completely
switch.
Silent.
Yep.
Yep. Makes me crazy. So there's Apple. Amazon, they made even more money. They actually posted a net loss because of an investment they made in Rivian, which is an electric vehicle maker. But revenues of $121.2 billion.
Holy cow.
Like an apple and a half. You know?
Holy cow.
I know. It's crazy. If it wasn't for a $3.9 billion loss related to that Rivian investment, they would have had a profit of $1.9
billion. We've always said this. Amazon has the power to determine whether they're profitable or not. They just there's a dial.
Oh, yeah.
It's at Andy Jassy's desk. When Bezos handed the reins over, he said,
right.
Don't forget the dial. It's in the drawer. You just turn the knob depending on how much you want to make or how little.
We took one of those red target buttons and we added a dial
that
to
was
it.
That was easy.
The same thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So the interesting thing here to me is the AWS number, right? So AWS.
And that's the competitor for Azure, of course.
Yeah, that's right. And for the entire Microsoft cloud. And you would think I could find it in my own article.
33% year over year.
There you go. Up to $19.74 billion. So Mary Jo might remember the figure for the so-called Microsoft cloud. I want to say it was $25 billion-ish.
Yep.
Well, look at me. Look at me.
I know.
25.
Impressive.
He pulls out of the air. Yeah.
Yep.
So Microsoft's cloud is bigger than Amazon's? No. Amazon's number
Microsoft
one.
Cloud,
no, you got to remember.
It's not just Azure.
This is Microsoft.
That bundling thing again.
Yeah, they used to call it commercial cloud. Now it's Microsoft Cloud. It doesn't exist. It's just, let's cherry pick all our best cloud-based businesses, add them together, call them something, and then maybe
and
people
then we look
will
better than
to
Amazon.
AWS. Yeah. That's right.
Yep.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But Amazon's still dominant in this.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah. We don't know the real Azure number for the quarter, but we know that the biggest part of Microsoft Cloud is Microsoft 365. It's not Azure. So.
Right. That's right. And also, we know the business unit that Azure's in, and we know what those revenues are. And server's a chunk of that, but I think it's fair to say, I don't know, two-thirds of that probably. Is probably, we don't know. See, this is the problem. We don't know. We can only guess. So we could make that kind of comparison. But yes, AWS is much bigger than Azure for sure. Yeah. And then the two that I think are most important to what we're kind of talking about here today, like every day, which is Windows, Intel and AMD. Intel, I don't know if you have like a funeral dirge you can play right now, but they're not doing great. So net loss of $454 million and revenues of $15.3 billion. 22% decline year over year. Their biggest business, of course, is what they call the client computing group. This is the group that makes the microprocessors for PCs. Biggest year over year loss was of 25% to $7.7 billion in revenues. Intel says that they have seen a reduction in PC sales of 10% in the quarter, and that with the poor economy, et cetera, is causing, you know, the supply chain issues, all that stuff is the problem. But then we have AMD. AMD is kind of interesting. They're the one non-asterisk company in this entire list. They reported a net income of $447 million on revenues of $6.6 billion. So what did I say from? So they're about, not quite, they're more than half the size, but they're, you know, they're not nearly as big as Intel, obviously, by revenues. But every single one of their business units had double-digit growth. And I'm talking 20-something percent or more, which is incredible. Their client segment, again, microprocessors for PCs, up 25% year over year. In fact, I think that was the slowest growth they experienced in the quarter, driven by strong rise in mobile sales, right? They also have a gaming segment, which I think we could kind of throw into that client segment as well, right? This is the Radeon cards and so forth. Another $1.7 billion in revenues, up 32%. Right. It's just crazy. A data center segment up 83%, $1.5 billion in revenues. And then they have an embedded segment, which is up some insane amount because they had an acquisition, but another $1.3 billion in revenues. This was, I think, the only earnings report I read where I was like, yeah, this is the way it used to be all the time. You know. And meanwhile, they're talking about, we're already working on next generation 5-nanometer product shipments, you know, blah, blah, blah. They're just going gangbusters. Mm-hmm. So I think the interesting thing, the interesting thing about AMD clearly is its competition with Intel. It's always been a much smaller player. It's starting to close the gap a little bit here. Now,
I think isn't it market cap higher? Or at least it was briefly.
Its market cap is higher. It was right on the day they announced this. That's true. And I'm trying to just say, so $2.2 billion in
revenues. Stunning. If you had said 10 years ago, AMD's market cap will exceed Intel's. Even for a minute, that's what.
So
Intel has just tanked it.
But Intel, their language is like, look, we've hit bottom. We're making all these investments. Right. We're doing fabs. I know. We're bouncing off the bottom. I'll just leave this one hanging out there. Is their client computing group, which arguably is the same as two of AMD's business groups, right? But $7.7 billion in revenue. So that's over three times the size of AMD's client segment. But if you add in the gaming segment, I think those all go together. It gets a lot closer. So it's about $4 billion versus $7.7. So AMD's, logistically speaking, revenue-wise, is really about 50% the size of Intel.
Yeah, it's only about half as big.
And they used to be like 20%, right? Like they've made significant gains.
Well, and this is in a quarter where PC sales were horrible, right?
Horrible. Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep.
So, horrible. Intel lost $500 million. That's a lot of money.
It is.
For a company like Intel to lose. And now they're building $20 billion fabs. So this is a very rocky situation.
Yep. Well, it is. I, right. That's right. I think that like so many other companies in big tech, they were artificially helped by the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
and that this mm-hmm. softness would have mm-hmm. been seen 2 years ago.
Yeah, probably. Right.
And it is maybe necessary or is maybe unavoidable because of this transition they're making. You know, I think we talked last week about this MediaTek partnership they had. And from Intel's perspective, it was like, see, we already have signed up someone from our fabs. And then you talk to MediaTek and they're like, yeah, we're only using it for the old stuff because they can only manufacture like 11, 10, maybe nanometer.
Isn't that sad?
We need 3, 2, blah, 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 whatever. We're going to Taiwan for that stuff.
But that's why there's $52 billion in the CHIPS Act for American companies.
And soon, I think, by the way, soon to be $288 billion. And
wow.
Intel has themselves, it's got to be in the $200 billion range between Europe and the United States, the various facilities. They're pouring money into these.
There's an interesting clause in this money from the federal government, the U.S. government. You may not continue to do stuff in Asia. So
yes, that's right.
The chip business is in a big turmoil right now. It's very interesting to see what's going to happen.
I wonder how this is going to impact Frito-Lay.
But then the government throwing in hundreds of billions of dollars into it really muddies the waters. It's like,
yeah, it does.
Wow.
Hey, remember how all those companies in China were colluding with the Chinese government? Yeah.
Yeah.
We're doing that.
Yeah, well, we should, shouldn't we? I mean,
you got to compete on an even playing field.
There's no choice, is there?
I mean, it's a good investment.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's really I'm glad I don't invest in tech stocks. That's all I can say. It was a crazy week. I picked. So I'm looking. I'll tell a story on myself. I'm looking at the market. I knew that all these results were going to come in last week. I knew we were going to get GDP numbers last week, and I thought I'm getting out of stocks. Just sometimes I do this where I just go, I'm going to sell all my. It's all index stocks. It's all index funds, right? So, it's the market as a whole. So I'm gonna get it and put it in a stable value fund. And as soon as I do, the S&P has the best week it's had all year. You should watch me. And when I sell my stocks, you should buy.
Nice.
I am such an idiot, So now
I must have told you my big tech start talks. Yeah, big tech stock story. I must have told you
what?
This could 20, 25 years ago. My father. Yeah, it was right around the time Microsoft was involved with all the antitrust stuff. My father came to me and he's like, yeah, I'm like investing in Intel and Microsoft. They drive me crazy. Every time Intel's competitors announce something, the stock price goes flying down. Every time Intel announces something, they go flying up. And I'm like, yeah, that's normal. And he's like, well, what about this Microsoft thing? Is the government going to break them up? What am I going to do? I'm like, Dad, this is a win-win. Think about it. Either they win this case, in which case they emerge victorious, the stock's going to go through the roof, or they get split up. And then you're going to own stock in 2 or 3
value.
Companies.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're golden. And then they settled. and then the stock just...
As long as he continued
for 10
to
straight
hold
years.
It for another 20, he's okay.
Now we'd be golden. But he had to sit through 10 years of Steve Ballmer and $30 a share. And, the stock didn't go anywhere for a decade.
It's irrational. That's the problem with the stock market. Yeah, don't listen to me either. I told my dad to sell his Apple stock when Steve Jobs died. That was smart. He didn't. Thank goodness. Our parents should not take advice from us. And I promise not to take advice from my son on the stock market. But the stock market's irrational, I mean, that's the problem. It doesn't have anything to do with anything.
What's happening?
For me to assume, they're going to see this GDP go down and they're going to go crazy. No, they went up.
Yeah.
We have our kid and his friends all invested in Bitcoin, I guess. And we'd only just found this out. And I was like, I swear to God, I was like, if you're telling me now you're going to retire, I'm going to come over there and kill you.
Asking, he's got his hand out. Probably.
Yeah. No, he actually got out of it. So they made some money in there.
Oh, good. Yeah. What is it with the youngs? Both my kids want to do NFTs and crypto. And I keep saying no. And they say, well, Dad, you're just a boomer.
When it comes to money, boomer. I've always been the most conservative person on earth. Yeah. And I just don't ever take risks.
Yeah, that's the smart.
Yeah.
And as one of our advertisers always says, time in the market beats timing in the market. And I wish I would listen to that.
That's true.
And just let it ride. Let the chips ride. Mm-hmm. Problem is I'm retirement age, right? I don't have a lot more time.
You don't want to ride anymore. Yeah. You want to start cashing.
Basically, that was, I was thinking, you know what? I have a pile of money. I just, I know it's going away.
How old are you now? I'm
sorry. 65.
65. Oh, geez. So you could.
I could start. I could start withdrawing. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I have enough to live on for the rest of my life. But my fear was that it would be slowly disappear. Of course, with inflation, having it in a 2% stable value fund isn't really good either. You just, I don't know what to do.
You'll hold off on Social Security as long as
Till you're 70 and a half.
And then that's just going to be like this bonus, you know.
Yeah, it's like $4,000 a month for nothing.
That's incredible. Nice. Yeah, that's incredible.
I know. All this time earning. Let's just hope they don't shut it down.
Exactly. Yeah. So right behind you. So hopefully they don't.
Yeah, that's right. My advice to kids, don't count on Social Security. Be putting money aside every paycheck.
Yeah, and now, start investing in your 20s.
40,000 more Microsofties can.
Yes, they can.
That was good.
This is surprising, right? This report.
You know what, though? This kind of thing has come out for a lot of big tech companies who have not talked about this to date, but have in recent weeks said, hey, we're not hiring anymore. And this is not unique to Microsoft.
No, but this is crazy. This is GeekWire. Todd Bishop, over our friend at GeekWire, he does all these calculations based on SEC reports plus earnings to figure out how many people does Microsoft really have, right? And I always think in my head when somebody says to me, how many employees does Microsoft have? I always say 160,000. I don't know why I always say that. But the actual number as of June 30th was 221,000. They added 40,000 jobs last year, the biggest number of jobs they've ever added in a single year, which is just astounding. So some of these happen through acquisitions, right? They bought Nuance, so they added 6,500 employees there. They bought Xandr, the former AT&T advertising technology, so they added another 1,500. Then a month or so ago, they said they were going to cut 1% of the workforce, so take away 1,700 to 2,000 jobs. But the most surprising chart in Todd's article is, what kind of jobs are they adding?
And for a long time, where are those people going exactly?
Long time, this was products and engineering that was growing the fastest of everything, product R&D. Now, since 2020, the fastest growing category is operations. So these are the people, I believe, who run like data center, who do consulting, all those kinds of jobs. Mm-hmm. Not sales and marketing, but like a whole other set of people who do operations jobs. And that is the fastest growing category of jobs at Microsoft by far.
It's a different company.
I just found all this interesting. It is such a completely different company than it was even just a couple of years ago, right?
That's really
because of the vast diversity of these data center locations around the world. Mm-hmm. You're also seeing more and more people not working in the Redmond area, right? Although, having just been there, and I didn't visit Microsoft officially or anything, but Microsoft has facilities all over that area now. It's not just Redmond, Bellevue. It's like they were like everywhere because they don't have enough space.
Right.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
That's funny because, even Meta is saying, we're going to lay people off. The fat times are over.
This is very common in big tech, right?
Yeah,
Google.
It is.
We're going to hyper focus on things that make the most sense, which frankly would get rid of most of what they offer if they were serious about it. You know, this is a very common thing in big tech right now. They're kind of circling the wagons there.
Yep. You waited for it. You wanted it. You've asked for it. You begged for it. Paul Thurrott is here to give you the Xbox news.
It's kind of Xbox and gaming because honestly, most of these stories aren't Xbox specific. But the two that are excellent. So it's August, obviously. Last week I would have mentioned the Games with Gold titles that are coming this month. Today we have the first set of Xbox Game Pass titles that are coming this month. And there's a couple of really good ones in here. I think the big one for me is Ghost Recon Wildlands. You know, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands, as we call it. So
Are those fun games? I see all those Tom Clancy games.
Yeah, I haven't played one in a while, but those are games I've finished, and those are also games where my son and I have spent a lot of time playing together. They have a lot of neat little co-op mission things you can do and stuff.
It's, that's cool.
Those are always pretty great. Turbo Golf Racing, am I right?
Obviously, Turbo Cooking Golf Simulator. Racing. There you go.
Did you see there was one? It's like, I'm going to get the name wrong, but it's like Power Washing Simulator.
Oh, yeah. People love that.
Yep. Now we have
so much fun.
Simulator. So it's all of the excellent stuff about cooking with none of the eating of the
food.
None
of the food.
Which doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense. But anyway, these games are all coming out between today and the middle of the month. Actually, Ghost Recon Wildlands is available now. So that one is available already. The other, it's this, I love this story. So Microsoft has said publicly that they expect the Activision Blizzard acquisition to conclude within this fiscal year that we're in now, meaning by next June. I think a lot of people are kind of hoping and expecting will actually happen this year. But what they're doing, of course, is interacting with regulatory bodies around the world to make sure there's no hitches. I guess it makes sense, hasn't been publicized a lot. Competitors are also making the rounds at regulators trying to complain to them that this should never happen. And one of those is Sony. And Sony has gone to regulators, and we know of one instance explicitly, the New Zealand Commerce Commission, which is their antitrust regulatory body, that that might be Microsoft. Doesn't matter. They've gone to at least one regulatory body and said, hey,
we don't care.
There are no games as big as Call of Duty. Like, you cannot let this go to Microsoft because this is what causes people to choose consoles.
Yeah.
It's the reason Sony paid a lot of money to get that Call of Duty exclusivity several years back, which stunk for me because I'm on Xbox and then I started getting DLC late and so forth. That's actually kind of reversed in more recent years, but that was a big problem.
Mary Jo and I are very upset that Stray is a Sony exclusive.
Right.
Do you know that game, Mary Jo? You would love this game.
I do. Yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah.
We did.
Everybody
seems to love it.
Yeah.
Including cats. Yeah. Cats love it as well.
So the greatest line I heard about that was someone said, people are discovering that Stray is an awesome game because cats are dicks.
It's kind of like the goat simulator. You get to be
a cat. Cats have pretty good lives.
Yeah. Not bad. Not bad. That's so hysterical.
It's funny you mentioned it. I meant to mention this game to Mary Jo. So I'm glad you talked about that. But Microsoft has gone to regulatory bodies and said, they don't make anything that important. Who cares? There are no must-have games from the studio that brought you Overwatch,
Activision
Diablo,
Blizzard.
Call of Duty.
That's why we're spending billions to buy it. Nothing good.
Exactly.
Helping matters maybe in a weird way. Activision Blizzard's not doing great. So they had a net income of $280 million on revenues of $1.64 billion for the same quarter we've been talking about. Those are significant declines over what they had a year ago. So basically they've halved their revenues. It's going downhill fast. They're losing tens of millions of Call of Duty users because that last game wasn't that great. So interestingly, for them going forward, there's going to be a big game this year, Modern Warfare 2. But then next year, there's not going to be a new game. And that's the first time that's happened since, I don't know, 2003 or something, a long time ago. And 2004, maybe. But they're going to fill it in with, as you would think, premium paid content. So in other words, they're going to keep adding content to whatever's out in the world. So we'll see what that looks like next year. But this year is a big deal for Activision Blizzard, not just because of Microsoft, but because if this game tanks, I don't know where they go next. I mean, I don't know. They're going to emerge as a much smaller company either way.
Huh.
So we'll see. Huh. We'll see. So the rest of this is more industry news. Stadia, for example, this is the Google streaming service.
I didn't even cover this rumor because it just wasn't credible to me.
Yeah, same. Basically someone came up, it was on Twitter through some Facebook group, supposedly. Someone who, a friend of a friend, claiming, it's going to end by the end of summer.
Such a BS rumor.
So did you see the initial Google response? They basically copied the post in a tweet, but they changed it to be about something else. So it's like, just a heads up, an old coworker of mine is now one of the social managers for Google. They had a pretty big meeting in California. And they're like, and now you can get this new game for no additional cost on Stadia.
Oh, wow. That's hysterical. That's a great way to rebut it. Yeah.
But they're like, we're not shutting down.
No, a friend told me they're shutting down.
Wow, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. So Stadia is still alive. Amazon Luna, this is Amazon's cloud streaming service for games, is now available on the 2022 Samsung smart TVs, Microsoft Cloud Gaming. So that was announced, probably late June or something. NVIDIA GeForce Now is on there. Stadia is on there. So now Amazon Luna. So this Samsung gaming initiative is actually working out pretty well. So there's a Samsung Gaming Hub app. You can now access all of these cloud gaming, cloud streaming services from one place. That's pretty cool.
Well, that's really neat. Yeah. That's a smart way to sell TVs.
Yep. So I agree. It's a good partnership. Yeah. I need a new TV.
There you go.
And the earnings will not end because actually the earnings will not end. We have two more earnings stories. So Sony announced their earnings. They sold 2.4 million PlayStation 5 video consoles. That's actually a little bit up from the same quarter a year earlier. But remember, they had all those problems a year ago. Revenues declined from PlayStation, declined 2%. Software sales declined by 26%. Not a lot of good news there, but same issues as the rest of the industry.
That's a Mai Tai of headwinds right there.
That's right. They do have 47.3 million PlayStation Plus subscribers. That's up 2%. But monthly active users were actually down 3% to 102 million.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of places saying that the recession has hit gaming. And I don't really understand that.
I would understand it if the story was everybody quit their jobs. Right, yeah. Right, exactly.
you go home, you're going to play games, right?
Well, right. So the active user number is tough because you would think, well, people are home doing nothing. They'll play games. They'll play the games they already own. Unit they sales and ones, revenues actually. Going down. Yeah. Like, yeah, I get that. But yeah, I can't explain it. But they're not the only company that said this. NPD came up with a thing for the United States. Time spent gaming is down double figures in both cases.
Isn't that weird?
Year over year. Yep. Mm. And just a small note, too, I just want to say about Sony. They closed their $3.6 billion acquisition of Bungie. This is the studio that originally created Halo and Destiny.
Love Bungie. Love them. And Marathon Halo.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
But they sold Halo to Microsoft has the Halo properties, right. Not... when they bought...
Yeah, I think Destiny is still owned by Bungie, I believe.
Right? Oh, interesting. Okay.
I think so. I could be wrong, but I think they do.
People are kind of mad at them for Destiny, I think.
Sure. Yeah. As one review pointed out, Destiny 2 solves all of the problems in the original game. And I'm like, that's great. So if I bought the original game, do I get those for free? Or how does it solve the problems? I have to buy a new game. Anyway.
Didn't Microsoft buy Bungie? And then, so they sold it to Sony?
They did. And then they asked to be spun off.
Right. They were spun off first.
Microsoft said, you have to leave Halo here.
Leave Halo.
And they said, fine.
Yep.
And then they made Destiny after they left Microsoft.
Didn't want that anyway.
Well, stupid. I mean, look, even if you love Destiny, you have to admit, it's very similar, right? Yeah. It's like graphically and the whole presentation is very similar to Halo. Good games. Yeah, it's fine. And then finally, Nintendo also reported down everything. So net income of $894 million on revenues of 2.3. 4.7 decline year over year. Switch sales are down 23% to 3.43 million units. Supply and production issues, yada, yada, yada. They've got some big software sales, though. I read the titles of Nintendo games, and I feel like the oldest person on earth. I have no idea what they're talking about.
I love my Switch. I'm playing Halo.
It's like Mario Strikers, Battle League.
But I'm playing Portal on it, and I love it. It's, I got Portal.
Did you see the guy on the cruise who had the...
He had the Steam Deck. At first, I thought it was a Nintendo, but then I looked closely, and it was... really big, and I thought,
I think about that a lot, either Steam Deck or a Switch. But
I would get a Switch. I think the Steam Deck is, it's hard to put a PC in a form factor that size. It's funny, when we were on the cruise, so I missed it, because as you know, the internet on the cruise wasn't great, was it, Paul?
I didn't notice that.
I got an email from Steam saying, okay, you can buy your Steam Deck now.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. But it's only good for 24 hours. So by the time I got that email... It had flown.
How much are they going for now? What's the price?
Well, I had reserved. So you reserve the model you want. I'd reserve the top of the line 512 gig model. Yeah. I think that was $650, something like that. But they go as low as $500, I think.
I got you.
But it's a PC. It's not battery life's not great. And
yeah. Can you dock it and play on a big screen?
I think so. Micah has one. He lent it to me. He got it for review. He did his review on it on our tech break. And then he lent it to me and I had it for about 5 minutes. I said, I'm going back to the Switch. Especially the OLED, the newer Switch.
Well, because obviously with a Switch game, as you're playing it with whatever controllers you play it with,
yeah,
that's what
it's made for the Switch.
For.
It's not a PC game.
But when you play a PC game,
yeah,
there's some lost in translation to that. And plus, it's those games were all designed to be on much higher res screens.
Exactly. That was my problem. I tried to play Valheim on it,
and it was a 720p or something like that.
Yeah. But I'm a little spoiled. I'm playing it on a 55-inch OLED monitor. I mean, it's giant. So.
But that's, when you get off your chariot and join us here in the present, it must be.
I took Windows off of that gaming room, and I'm gonna have to put it back so I can play Stray. Yeah.
I was gonna say, what do you Linux and Steam on it? Is that what?
Linux and Steam is great. And Valheim was written in Linux, supports Windows, of course, but works great in Linux. The Steam. The only really advantage of the Steam Deck is it has. Encouraged a lot of developers to port their game to Linux because it is Linux.
Right.
So that is a good thing. So there are a lot more games now available for Linux than there used to be. And there's, emulation layers like Proton and stuff. But I think I need to put Windows back on that machine, I'm sad to say. Sigh.
Like a Charlie Brown sigh.
Sigh. I know this is...
Like cloud above it.
Somebody said, you shouldn't call us dozers... You should call us winners. So I think this is a show for winners and dozers. And that you pick which one you want to be.
Never the twain shall meet.
Never the twain shall meet. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, it's back of the book time with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Tip of the week, picks of the week, maybe even some beer. Or a Mai Tai of headwinds. I don't know. It depends if Stephanie, how quickly Stephanie can whip one up. Our show today brought to you by Lenovo, orchestrated by the experts at CDW. The helpful people at CDW understand that as the world changes, your organization needs to adapt quickly to be successful. So how can CDW keep your business ahead of the curve? Well, with Lenovo ThinkPads. Love those ThinkPads. These powerful devices deliver the business class performance you're looking for thanks to Windows 10 and the Intel Evo platform. With your remote teams working across the country, around the world, collaboration's never a problem because Lenovo ThinkPads keep your organization productive and connected from anywhere. Plus, CDW knows your workforce has different work styles and needs flexibility, which is why Lenovo ThinkPads are equipped with responsive tools and built-in features that let your team work seamlessly across their favorite tools. Now, think about that for a second. Oh, and let's not forget security. These high-performing machines protect at the highest level with built-in hardware to guard against modern threats without slowing your team down. When you need to get more out of your technology, Lenovo makes seamless productivity possible, and CDW makes it powerful. Learn more at cdw.com/Lenovo Client. That's cdw.com/Lenovo Client. Thanks, CDW, so much for making Windows Weekly a reality. Okay, for the winners and the dozers, it's time for a tip of the week, Mr. Paul Thurrott.
So, roughly 10 years ago, I wrote an editorial that I think was called The Right Tool for the Job. And it was kind of a response to the stuff that is now very commonplace in the PC industry, where we had these like kind of transforming PCs. Like you could clip a keyboard onto a tablet, or you could have like a mini tablet with a tiny screen on it and maybe docked it in some cases.
Or you had those
phablets, and blah, 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 whatever. So this has never stopped. Like now we have folding phones and we all this, this notion that like, one device can do everything. And it's always been the compromise, right? So maybe you have like Samsung DeX, you have your phone dock with a screen, a keyboard. It's like, it works. But, I don't think for most people that this could replace an actual computer, right? It's like, it's a good idea. Like in theory, it's a good idea, but it's never really panned out, And I was thinking about this past week because I now have almost a dozen computers in for review. Like I've gone from not having anything to write about to having too much. It's kind of overwhelming. And I was struck by the fact that most of these things are what I would call a transforming PC. In other words, a two-in-one or a convertible PC, the type of thing you can fold it around like a yoga, and it can be like a large, heavy tablet with like some stupid little stylus on it. And, maybe it plugs in and you don't lose it because there's a garage for it. But Like, who actually uses these things, you know? This is kind of an extension of the conversation we had sometime in the past month where I admitted that Mary Jo was right about this notion of multi-touch on laptop screens. That, you know, for most people, this is unnecessary, right? It's the same sort of thing, right? Like, in other words, I could sort of say in theory, the addition of multi-touch doesn't hurt anybody. And you may find over time that as you use it, you might start touching the screen, you know?
Yeah.
And I say that, again, this is sort of a theory. It's like... There's no touch
on this Dell XPS 15.
Nope.
I don't like touch. And I got to tell you, the reason I don't like it is because, well, Mary Jo, same thing. I have cats. So I'll be like, I'm looking at my screen. And I'm like, trying to get the hair off. And then I flick it and I cause something to happen on the screen because it's a multi-touch, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is actually a problem.
Yeah.
And I wondered to myself, like, why is it? Like, why? I understand why Microsoft might want to try to do this to Windows, make it work on this kind of transforming computer because they're trying to differentiate both with the Mac and with lower end, you know, just tablets like the iPad. But like, why has the PC industry embraced this? Like, these things can't possibly make sense for most customers. They can't, right? I think most people who buy like an X1 Yoga or a Spectre X360, which, by the way, two of my favorite computers of all time, I use them as laptops.
But yeah, you had a Yoga on the cruise, and I played with it, and I pointed out I had a Yoga for years, never once flipped it around to use it as a tablet. Never once.
Because I think people buy them and think, you know, maybe. You know, you never know. It's additional functionality. I want to get the good thing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this thing kind of pans out. And I think they pulled the stylus out once. They're like, what is this thing? I'm writing with a toothpick? Like, you know, it doesn't make
sense. I love those yogas. I guess it's kind of a nice idea to have a stylus. Although you show me the stylus and it's like the same size as in the Samsung Galaxy phone.
I can't hold it in my hand comfortably. Yeah. It's too small.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm not going to ding any of these computers because they transform, blah, 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 whatever. But look, when you're buying a computer for yourself and you're going to spend $1,000, possibly more, to get a good Windows PC for sure, think about this stuff because you could probably save money by not going with those transforming computers.
Yeah.
You know, get an X1 Carbon instead of an X1 Yoga, for example. I wish that maybe they do, and I'm missing something. But, you know, like I said, the Spectre X360 on the business end, they have something called an EliteBook X360. Some of my favorite computers that I've ever used. But really what I want is a version like that doesn't flip around and do gymnastics and doesn't have a pen because I don't need that. That's just something I'm going to never use and I'm going to lose.
I'm kind of with you on this. I understand why people go, oh, but I might someday want to be able to do that. But if
you're not going to do it,
if it's the first computer you ever bought, maybe. But you know what you want now.
No, exactly. You can already sense like how people are going to kind of push back. For example, one of the look, there are artists. Okay, fine. There are probably 7 to 18 artists in the world who need this thing for sure. But if you're going to tell me that a student needs this kind of thing, absolutely not. Because here's one thing I know about putting my kids through school: they didn't learn handwriting. They don't learn how to write.
That's right.
In script. Mm-hmm. They write in block letters like cavemen. And that kind of writing is not fast.
I got that remarkable tablet, you know, that's the e-ink thing, because I thought, well, I could take handwritten notes. But I had forgotten that my handwriting is illegible. So it's the only thing I use it for
is
like drawing diagrams, you know?
Right.
That's it.
Now we draw like stick figures.
Stick figures.
And I can't, my hand strength, I can type faster than anybody.
Yeah.
But when I try to write, I can't even get through a check.
I've been meaning to say
without
that,
my hand.
Your handshake is so limp. I meant to mention.
And also oddly wet.
but on the bright side, very soft. Yep. I like that. I'm just teasing you. I don't even remember your handshake. I do remember, though, many years ago, shaking Mel Torme's hand.
Oh.
And it was like a pillow. It was like a cloud.
Wow.
And I thought, this man has never done an honest day work in his life. And it's true. He's Mel Torme. He didn't need to.
The tips of my pointer fingers are worn off from the F and the JK keys on the keyboard.
At least you don't have Emacs pinky. Now there is that's a real disability. I am agreeing with you. When I bought this XPS 15.
Buy the computer you need, not the computer.
You recommended, and you were right. I got the i5 12th generation instead of the i7. Fine. I didn't get a touch screen. Fine. This is a lovely computer without all the bells and whistles. And
I don't want anyone to point this out, but I believe, I'm positive, you could go into Device Manager and turn off multi-touch capabilities on the screen. I bet you can.
Yeah,
I'm not going to do that.
But you spent the money on it, but, though, right? You bought it. Right. That's the point. Is don't buy it if you ain't going to use it.
I will not. Well, see, this is the problem. So, for example, like one computer I really like is like Surface Laptop. So Microsoft comes out with a Surface Laptop 5 sometime in the next year. There's no way to get that computer without multi-touch. This is not an option.
Right.
Other computers, it depends on the, you know, bigger PC makers offer that option on some models, right? I know the ThinkPad X1 Carbon, I think I mentioned that already, multi-touch or non-multi-touch, your choice. So I don't know. I'm gonna try to seek out non-touch in the future for myself.
Interesting.
Wow.
No kidding. You
know. Do you guys remember when I said this and everybody was appalled?
No.
I don't remember.
Anyway, moving on to the next
one. When did that happen? No, I don't think so.
When all these touch screens started coming out and everything with built-in Windows Hello, I'm like, you know what? I just want a computer that doesn't have these things.
So
and everybody was like, you Luddite. Right. You Luddite.
Since you mentioned this, I have a memory that I'm not positive is accurate, but we went to the Netherlands to Haarlem for something, for some work event.
Yep.
And you brought the Surface Laptop 2.
The first one. With you, the first one, I think.
Oh, this is the first one. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. And you let me take it to review it or whatever. And for some reason in my head, that was the conversation. And maybe it was because it was a laptop and you were like, I don't understand why they would put this on a laptop. And I was like, that's how I remember that conversation.
Yeah,
like
you're somehow, right. That's what happened.
Around that trip. I think so.
No, because I said to you, I like this laptop, except I wish it didn't have touch. And you're like, oh, come on. Like, what? And I'm like, I don't need touch on the laptop.
Listen, it takes a big man to admit when he's wrong. And I am not a big man. But I was wrong. Anyway, there you go.
The point is, well taken. Know what you need and get that and that alone.
Exactly. Yeah, don't let people bully you and say, that's just because you're a Luddite.
Don't get sucked into the PC maker thing. Because I think PC. Right. I asked this question semi-rhetorically. Why would PC makers kind of follow along with Microsoft and go down this path when very clearly these computers are not desirable for most people? The reason is simple. They're upsells. Right.
Yeah.
They're more expensive.
They're
more premium products.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
Totally.
PC makers make money from premium PCs. They don't make money from the low end things. So, you know, if you buy a $700 pavilion that will perfectly meet your needs, HP's either going to make no money or very little money. But if you buy an X3, you know, a Spectre X360 for $1,499, HP's going to make a lot of money. It's a higher end product, too. I mean, that's part of it. But you don't need to spend that much money, and you don't need to buy stuff that you don't.
I do know that I do need a leather laptop, though. I do know that.
I
must have.
How do you feel? All right, but how do you feel about faux leather? Are you okay with
no pleather?
It has
no
to be
Alcantara.
Vegan leather.
I want Horween leather on my laptop.
Horween
leather. Okay. Does HP still make that leather laptop?
No, now it's fake leather because you know
it's fake. Yeah. It's vegan leather.
Real leather's too heavy, right?
It is heavy,
real leather's too heavy.
It used to be like the same leather that they made footballs out of or something, right?
It looked like a basketball to me, the texture of it.
Yeah.
You know, it was pimpled.
Yeah, dimpled. All right. Pimples. No, it's funny because Apple, and by the way, Apple fans have kind of not been happy. Apple refuses to make a touchscreen laptop or a touchscreen desktop.
Right. And I've actually, that's a good point. I've railed against them for that too.
Yeah.
And I will say this. So in Apple's case, there's a reason to complain because they make the most popular touch devices in the world and developers have to use Macs to develop those apps. If they had touchscreens, you could interact with the app the way you would, you know, normally on the screen in an emulator. Now, granted, you can just plug in a device, but I think that's the one case where you could say like, well, okay, this is for a developer making touch apps for a mobile device. Okay, a touchscreen could make some sense. That's about it. I mean, I listen, I know I'm going to hear from the people who I like to sit on the couch and flip the screen back and scroll through the thing with my finger while I'm watching TV. Yeah, okay. There are always exceptions. I mean, there are always people, and that's fine if you know that, and that's
We're not saying don't buy these. We're just saying buy what you need and no more. That's all.
Right.
That's exactly right.
And you know
what
you need.
Yep. And just really think about it. Like, what, you know, Mary Jo probably said, well, I don't know what Mary Jo travels with, but I know she brings a phone. She might bring a Kindle. I know she doesn't have an iPad or whatever, but there you go. So, but there you go. Three devices, each of which does a specific thing well. Yeah, I travel with a phone and an iPad and a laptop. Whatever. Laptops for work, iPads for entertainment and reading. Fine. Those things are good for those jobs. Mm-hmm. The PC is okay for reading and entertainment. I don't really like to suck battery life watching a movie when I want to use that for work. You know, I like the separation. I actually think it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I kind of beat this one to death, but, you know, buy the thing that makes sense.
No, I think, you know, this is the kind of thing I might do a monologue on the radio show on, because I think people, normal consumers who, you know, you and I and Mary Jo and everybody who's probably listening to the show gets asked all the time, what laptop should I get?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
And I think that's really good advice, which is don't be tempted by, you know, the fins, and the suicide doors, and the luggage rack and the tow hitch. Get what you need.
The in-dash record player.
Yeah. Get what and you, if you didn't know, I guess it would be reasonable to say, well, I want to take, you know, but for instance, I don't like the Surface because I don't want a detachable keyboard. I want a nice, solid keyboard to type on.
Mm-hmm. And heathen.
But I know what I want. So it's not, so I'm not tempted by the others, you know?
So I haven't written this review yet, but I will soon. But one of the devices I have in for review right now is an $850 HP Pavilion Plus, 14-inch display. It's not touch. Beautiful keyboard, perfect keyboard. It's $850.
Wow.
It has an OLED screen.
Wow.
It's 16 gigs of RAM.
Price.
It's got an i7 processor. Yeah. Oh, no, this is, it's so an nice. H series processor. It's beautiful. Mm. This for me is perfect is a strong word, but it is what I need for my use case, which is I'm typing.
Which HP is this? I want to write this down.
It's brand new. So it's called a Pavilion Plus 14.
That's their consumer brand, the Pavilion.
Pavilion is, so HP has an entry level brand called HP. Pavilion's the next step up. It's the mainstream brand for consumers. Last year they came out with, they have pavilions of different sizes, but last year they came out with something I think was called the Pavilion Aero, which was nearly perfect. That was a 13-inch screen. Backlit keys were an option, which is like, seriously, guys. But still, well under $1,000, great little computer. This one, I think they found the winning formula. This is an incredible combination of high-end parts, including the display, perfect keyboard, right display size, perfect form factor, you know, right weight and size and thickness, right ports, you know. It's a beautiful machine. It's beautiful. And it's a Pavilion, right?
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But most of the people who listen to this show would not buy a Pavilion. I know I wouldn't.
They would immediately zone out as soon as I said the word.
I need the Elite of the Spectre. Yeah. I'm sorry. I got to have
it. No, this is it. This is the one I would buy.
Isn't that funny?
Oh, good. I'm with my own money.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. It's beautiful.
Can I play Stray on it? That's the real question.
It's interesting. So it's not a gaming laptop, but it does have the Omen performance app on it.
Oh, nice.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But it's what do you call it? Integrated graphics. But 12th gen H series. I mean, not bad.
All right. Bad. App pick. We've spent enough time on your tip. Let's do your app pick of the week.
This will be quicker. So my app pick is on the Mac. We know that Parallels Desktop does an incredible job of virtualizing Windows on ARM on M1 or whatever M2 based Macs. VMware has come up with a preview of its next version of Fusion, which is their version of this software. And this will support Windows 11 on both Intel and Apple Silicon Macs, something Parallels did last year. So it's something anyone could try right now. And you can kind of compare it to Parallels Desktop. I will just remind people it's August. And that means that Parallels is about to any day now announce a new version of Parallels Desktop, probably whatever the next version number is, 18, I think. So you might want to compare the two together. But I don't know. I'm more familiar with Parallels Desktop, but I don't remember if they supported Windows on ARM on Apple Silicon.
Yeah,
they did. Okay. All right. So now they support Windows 11. So
the big change. To me, it's always been 601, half a dozen the other. I go back and forth. There are people who have strong preferences. Is one of our
There really are.
Yeah,
yeah. That's why I don't want to be. I just have more experience with parallels. But like I said, sometime this month they will announce a new version. So if you're thinking about buying one of these things, I would just wait until you see what Parallels is doing.
There's a guy in chat just the other day said, "Oh, Parallels is so much better than VMware." Mm-hmm. You know, You know, they seem very, very similar. And they, what's interesting is they always go for feature parity. So because Parallels added Silicon and Windows on ARM, so VMware does. Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not as familiar with VMware. I know that Parallels does a great job. So if you want Linux, for example, they support several Linux distributions. Yep. The thing I really, I'm not a Mac user, right? Obviously. So the co-host of Windows Weekly does not use Mac, but if I did use a Mac and had to run Windows apps, which is the point of this software, I would use it in coherence mode, right? And the point of that is you're running Mac apps or you have websites, whatever it is, and you run an app. It's just an app, some Notepad for Windows or whatever. It comes up just the Windows. It's not in a like a desktop window that has the whole Windows environment. It's just another app.
Yeah, they call it coherence, I think.
Yeah, love that.
Both of them do that. Amazing. That is really, really... what most people want, right? You don't want to.
Yep.
You know you're running Windows, but you don't really want to see Windows. You just want to run that app.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's why it's there. That's why the software exists, right? Because you maybe work for a company that has one Windows app that you can't get on the Mac or anywhere else. You have to do it somehow. This is one of the better ways to do it, especially if you have an Apple Silicon based Mac. So, just something to look into.
Can you run Intel Windows on these things?
No. You have to run the they don't translate. Everyone's kind of waiting.
So that's
for that
problematic,
to happen.
Right? I mean, because a lot of Windows apps do not run on Windows on ARM.
Well, no, actually, it's not that many anymore.
Oh,
so,
okay. All right.
Yeah, they both. Well, I would imagine. I know a Parallels support x86 and the x64 emulation because that's supported in the platform. So I'm sure there are examples of apps that maybe are problematic, but.
All right.
I'm trying to think.
That's good.
I don't know of any off the top of my head. The issue there is support, right? So Microsoft doesn't officially support Windows 10 or 11 on M1.
What was that?
Sriracha. And a glass of water.
Oh,
and he, of
Lord,
course,
like, over your
jumped
computer.
Up and like, I was like, no.
You caught it, though, right?
I did. I caught it in my hand.
Wow, Ooh. Impressive.
Sorry, guys.
Whole show could have gone up in flames.
It could have.
I realize I've been talking too long. That's a weird way to do it, but that's fine. That's fine.
Mary Jo Foley is here with her Enterprise Pick of the Week.
We joke a lot on this show about how Microsoft has renamed everything but the kitchen sink as Defender. But you thought that was the end of it. There are more. Two more new Defender products were announced this week.
Oh, man.
I'm like, oh, man, really? This is so confusing already. One is called Defender Threat Intelligence, which I thought they already had as a product name, but I guess not. Or maybe this is an addition to it. And then there is Defender External Attack Surface Management, or as friends call it, EASM. These products are different from the other things in the Defender portfolio for a couple reasons. One is they're based on technology Microsoft bought when they bought Risk IQ, which was a threat intelligence service. Microsoft says that a lot of their other Defender products, maybe all of them, are about endpoint defense, so actually defending your devices. This is more about bringing intelligence to your organization's Security Operations Center, or SOC. There's no shortage of acronyms in the defense space here. So Defender Threat Intelligence gives customers access to real-time data from Microsoft security signals. The other, the Defender External Attack Surface Management, is supposed to give defenders, so you as a customer, the same view an attacker has when they select a target. So it lets you think and look at something as if you're the hacker, which is kind of interesting. Both of these are standalone services that can be added to an E5 subscription, I believe. If you thought there were a lot of Defender products, you just got two more. That's my enterprise pick.
Which leaves us, I think, the code name pick.
Yes. So this just happened right before the show started. This shows you how, this is a little insight into how Codename Watchers work. So the Walking Cat, our friend on Twitter, posted a thing and he said, look at what I just found. Create.microsoft.com. So as soon as he posted that, I went to the URL and I started digging around in it. And I'm like, oh, it's codename Oasis. I can see because I clicked on something and I saw Oasis. And he said, you're correct. The codename is Oasis. But then I looked it up because I'm like, I think there's already something at Microsoft codenamed Oasis. And Oasis was the codename Microsoft was using for the holographic shell when they were going to build that into Windows 10.
Well, they don't need that anymore.
Maybe, no, but he's like, okay, we can reuse that codename. But it made me think for a second, maybe this is about holograms and about mesh and mesh for Teams. But he then found a link that showed it's not about that. It's actually about this product he found a while ago that they still haven't announced called Microsoft Designer. We don't really know what this product is. Like I said, it hasn't been announced yet, but it has a connection with this Microsoft Create thing. So he posted a screenshot that says, here's Designer Preview. And it says, we use your content plus AI to create designs for you.
Mm.
And it shows how you can enter. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yep. So it could be like you're designing an Instagram post or a brochure or something for your family, like an invitation to a party. And you can hook up your media templates and all kinds of stuff like this. So this seems to be connected to what Designer and Create seem to be connected to the codename Oasis.
This is what I get when I log in. Thank you for your interest. We're busy working and not ready for you yet.
Yeah. Yep.
Come back and visit in the future.
Yeah. I wonder when they're going to announce this.
How does Walking Cat get in there, though? I don't understand.
Walking Cat's, like, amazing. This guy, he finds things all the time.
I want this designer. This is great.
Yeah, pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know when. Codename Oasis. Maybe we'll hear about it. Yeah, maybe we'll hear about it at Ignite. I don't know. Maybe.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Wow, you leave me wanting more, but instead I'm just going to have a beer. Do you have a recommendation? I love the name of this one.
I do.
This is hysterical.
There's a brewery in New Hampshire called Deciduous Brewing.
Oh.
They have a whole series of beers they call the Lollipop Forest. And when you drink one, you see why they call it this. It's advertised as a fruited sour. But because they add milk sugar, it's very sweet. I recently had one that was a combination of blackberry and raspberry. And I said to a friend, if you blindfolded me and gave me this, I would have thought I was drinking a smoothie, not beer. It does not taste like beer.
Wow. So that second photo on screen looks like a tiny can between two fingers.
Yeah, except it's not. It's a tiny can between two thighs.
Between two legs.
I saw that. I was like, that's how they're keeping the alcohol down.
It's the world's tiniest can.
Only 6%, but when I drank it, I'm like, okay, it was good, but definitely not a beer. It feels definitely like I just drank a blackberry raspberry smoothie, which, you know, in this kind of weather,
maybe
it's not a bad thing.
Maybe it's not the end of the world. Yeah.
No.
Lollipop Forest from Deciduous Brewing Company.
Yes.
Which is
New Hampshire.
Kind of a crazy name for a...
It is.
Brewing company.
I guess because deciduous trees, right? And they're in New Hampshire, right? Yeah. Obviously.
Leaves fall off. The colors change and all that.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, everybody. If you think this show is too short, and I know very few of you do, but if you think this show is too short, don't forget, this cat right here has a little something extra for you called Hands on Windows. Right now, it's a club exclusive. But should enough people listen to it and we can get some advertising going on it, we absolutely will go public with it. But thank you, club members, because you're supporting it. So if you're in Club Twit, absolutely check it out. It's on the Twit Plus feed, or you can subscribe. You get a dedicated feed for it. I think you can just buy it for $2.99 as well if you want. And that's $2.99 a month. So that's like, what is that? $3 divided by 4, 75 cents a show. It's nothing. And you get at least, we guarantee
you. I like
the
amount of time you spent on that math.
at least 75 cents of good information.
Maybe more.
Maybe even more. We can't promise, but, you know, you might. No, it's a hands-on Windows. You've done a bunch of episodes, but I think we've released only one so far.
Just one. I think one's coming out tomorrow.
Good.
The first two are kind of on the long side for this type of show, 15 to 20 minutes. But that's because they're top 10 lists or bottom 10 lists.
You nice.
Know, top 10. Well, actually 11. Top 11 features in Windows 11. 11 worst features in Windows 11, I think, is the one that's coming out tomorrow.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, some good multitasking stuff. I'm going to do keyboard shortcuts, lots of stuff.
So. And now, Paul's in Discord, so you might even be able to say something to him. We got him into the Discord just before the show began. So are you curious about all this? Yes, you are. All you have to do is join Club Twit, $7 a month, and that's not all. You get a whole lot more ad-free versions of every show we do. Of course, there are special shows for club members like the Untitled Linux Show, Stacy's Book Club. We're going to do a new book in a couple of weeks, Clara and the Sun, which is I'm loving this book. That'll be August 25th. Next, in a couple of weeks, Alex Lindsay has an Ask Me Anything in the club. Those are all club specials. If you don't get there live, you can listen on the Twit Plus feed. That's part of your membership. So you get ad-free versions of every show. You get the Twit Plus feed. You also get access to the Discord. And the Discord is a really fun way to not only participate with our hosts, but also to participate with other club members, because there's all sorts of topics, not just shows, but beer, wine, cocktails, coding, comics, food, ham radio, hardware, show and tell, sports, everything. Join the club. There's even a conversation about the Twit Cruise. Join the club. All you have to do is go to twit.tv/clubtwit. This Discord is active as frick, says Sirachi. Kev Brewer, thank you. As always, the perfect GIF for the moment. twit.tv/clubtwit. It really helps us, especially as you know, the recession is kind of starting to hit us. Advertisers are cutting back and so forth. And so this is the way we kind of smooth out those ups and downs. Plus, it gives us the money to do additional stuff like hands-on Windows. Subscribe. Mm-hmm. We love new members. twit.tv/clubtwit. And you'll see there a link where you can get it for $2.99. If you just want Paul, if all you want is just Paul, you can get it. This show is available. Wow, all the shows.
That's a weird little subscription, but yeah, it's out there.
Hey, you'd be surprised. Yeah. We do Windows Weekly every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch us do it live at live.twit.tv. Chat for free in irc.twit.tv. It's an IRC chat room. You can use your browser to go there and or use an IRC client if you want. You get your choice. You can also chat in the Club Twit Discord, which is always a lot of fun. It's always a lot of weird, but there it is. And Mary Jo Foley, you put that in there.
I did not.
No, oh, okay.
I didn't put the little risque thing that just was put in there.
Hands on Paul's shorts? No, that's something else entirely.
I did
Guys,
not do that.
It's disappointing enough already. Let's just,
but it has a good. It would be a good acronym, HOPS. Anyway. if you don't want to pay, you can get it for free with ads, of course, at twit.tv/WW. There's a YouTube channel dedicated to this show and all of our other shows. Each has its own channel. And, of course, because it's a podcast, you don't have to use Spotify to listen. You can listen with any podcast client, including Spotify. Just subscribe to Windows Weekly. You'll get it automatically on a Wednesday afternoon right after we finish. Paul says, I will survive this. that's great. I'm so glad you're in there, Paul, now. You're going to have a lot of fun in there.
I'm so worried about being distracted, but I really do like this kind of thing.
No, it's great. I think this is the future of social entirely. You know, Discord and its like are really you hanging out with the people you care about.
Right.
Isn't that what Facebook promised but didn't deliver?
I mean, it's not antagonistic enough for me. But, yeah, you know, I see it.
Yeah, well, that's the nice thing about it being club members only. Because only, you know, if you pay $7 to be in there, you're not going to waste your time being a jerk. You know?
That's good.
Yeah, it's fair, fantastic.
Fair enough.
Folks, we will be back next Wednesday. You'll find Paul Thurrott all week long at Thurrott.com. That's his website, Thurrott.com. His books, The Field Guide to Windows 10, soon to be The Field Guide to Windows 11, available at leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley writes for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And they're really, both of them, super great to subscribe to pay attention to during the week. But then come back on a Wednesday for Windows Weekly. Stay cool, guys. Is it hot in Lower Macungie as well?
Sure is.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this whole week's been... Says it's 86.
Yeah. An 86... I mean, it's 86 here, but an 86 here is not
95.
As bad.
95. 95 tomorrow. Oish. 90 on Sunday, 90 on Monday.
It's humid.
It's going to be closer to 100 though? Here.
You know what's good?
What's good?
Mexico City, 74 degrees.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's because it's at altitude. Very nice.
I'm going there. I'll be there next week.
Are you? Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm glad to hear it. All right, guys. Have a great week. Enjoy Mexico City. We'll see you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that TwitNow is a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.